Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from The Mid-Adult that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up.
Hello everybody, I'm Annabelle and I'm absolutely fine, but today we are recording from our guest's very glamorous kitchen. So if you hear dishwashers, pipes, dogs, that's the joy of the home record. And I just went to go to the loo, of course, because, you know, Pavlovian response to entering any new situation or building is I have to pee. Walk into the park, immediately have to pee. Walk into a party, immediately have to pee. Had to pee, went into the loo. And I spotted by the sink when I was about to wash my hands, a bar of imperial leather.
I can't believe you're letting the cat out of the bag. Oh my God. I've got a reputation.
A reputation.
I've really
had
not
a reputation.
Anymore. Gone down the drain now.
No, but it was such a good thing because it gave me a real pang for my dead dad, who genuinely believed that imperial leather was the last word in glamour. And I think maybe it was those sort of late 70s, early 80s adverts they used to do for imperial leather, where it had a sort of blonde and a hairy-chested bloke sitting in a sort of foaming jacuzzi thing.
Those.
Anyway, so I'm exhausted anyway. I've been sent straight back into this sort of slight sort of, you know, daddy vortex. But it was very nice and comforting to see a good old bar of imperial leather. And how does the sticker stay on to the end? Get smaller and smaller and smaller, and yet the sticker clings on for dear life, heroically. That's what I think about imperial leather. How are you, Em?
Well, I'm absolutely fine, except you shouted at me this morning.
Well, shouted.
Because you are very tired, I'd like to say. But also because I have been using the Jones Road What the Foundation, which you have been telling me to use for weeks. And I got very uppity about it.
Yes, I gave it to you for your birthday. You said, I don't like foundation. You put it on. You said, oh, no, I don't like it. Oh, no, it's too much. No, I don't like anything about this, you said.
Okay, and now people are sort of practically asking me if I've had a facelift. And we watched a Christmas movie the other day with Lindsay Lohan, and my daughter was absolutely staggered that Lindsay Lohan was 12 years younger than me. So I feel like, you know, transformed. So there you go, What the Foundation, Jones Road, but also Annabelle's angry with me. Today's guest is the person who turned secondhand into vintage. She stunned New York in the 90s with her famous fanzine Cheap Date, which was a kind of antidote to the cynicism of commercial fashion. And she is often known as the Queen of Thrift. She has styled some of fashion's most enduring images and works closely with Oxfam to raise money and to raise awareness around sustainable fashion. I mean, she put secondhand into Selfridges, for fuck's sake. Bea Garnett is the person to talk to right now when money is tight, fashion feels oppressive, and we want to stop contributing to the disposable fast fashion phenomenon that does none of us any good. We will be asking her for some tips on how to negotiate shopping for vintage, where to go and what to look for, as well as her point of view on how to get dressed. But first of all, Bea, how are you?
I am absolutely fine. It's funny when you say that because you're like, well, I don't know, actually. I am absolutely fine. Last night, actually, Tom, who I live with, who's my, I want to say husband, but we're not actually married, but the father of my children and blah, blah, blah. But he said, yeah, I've got a feeling about the dogs. And he said, we just go over there and look. And I look behind the chaise longue and my brand new beautiful carpet, which is a, who is it? What's that? Sorry, now I've gone blank, 1950s. Oh, anyway, I look behind and the dog had shat everywhere and completely ruined the carpet on my brand new carpet. So I am absolutely fine. And it's a superficial thing, but it really, really, really made me cross.
Well, yeah, it's funny when things like that happen and you just really, really mind.
I minded so much. Also, my dogs have a really nice life and all they need to do is not that.
Also,
and
really,
that's it. And
I also,
they did it. And, yeah.
I also really like Tom saying, I've got a feeling about the dog.
Thank you. As you a, just, thank you. Well, that's another podcast.
Tom's dog
okay.
Dog.
Okay, that's not a thrifting podcast.
Is he a sensitive when it comes to your feelings?
As I said. As I said, podcast. We're going to move on. No,
Bea, it's the 90s. You're in your early 20s. And why did you even go to New York?
I went to New York because I felt very unconfident here. I felt kind of trapped by feeling, I don't want to say like a loser, because that's very like down on oneself, but I felt like I didn't know what to do and I didn't know how to do it. And I hadn't really made a success of things, really. And I felt like I was kind of surrounded by people who made things look very easy. And I suppose in a way for me, and then a friend of mine said, "Babe, there's an assistant job. Would you like?" I went to visit, actually, I go back. I went to visit New York and I was like, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
So I knew of New York and I had got this sense of this is fun. This is where I want to be. And so, you know, and then life moves on. But I always had that feeling of New York. Anyway, a friend of mine said, there's a job. And I went for the job interview and I got it. And so in a way, I suppose it was a thing of like reinvention. And that doesn't mean changing my personality, because I think that's probably quite hard to do. But what it did mean was being somewhere completely new, and that being a big relief.
I was watching this documentary that's on the BBC at the moment, it's on iPlayer, called The Sensationalists, which is about the YBAs.
Okay.
And one of the reasons it's so interesting is because it looks at the state of London and the country in the 90s. And what we forget is that it was... You're not a million miles from where we are now. Obviously, no Brexit, but there was a lot of homelessness. There was a lot of unemployment. People were losing their homes. They took up residence in all these deserted warehouses. It was then in East London, which was, you know, not yet sort of discovered.
Yeah.
You forget that London was a very dank, challenging place. Yeah. So it's interesting to hear you say that New York held all that promise.
It did. And also, I think there's something in London. And I would, you know, I don't know if this is true, because I've never been I've never been from the outside in lots of ways in London, but I feel like London is very much behind closed doors. You know, I think it feels like a hard place to access sometimes. Whereas New York, you know, all the doors are open. I don't mean in any like, well, here's a job. I just mean in terms of its philosophy, its psychology. It feels it's an embracing place. In the 90s, it felt much more welcoming and it kind of energetic
and you welcoming. Felt you could be yourself there, or at least sort of try a new self on kind of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't a conscious thing if I want to. It's only retrospectively that one can look back and figure out why one did certain things. But what I mean is I didn't know at the time I wanted to. It wasn't about changing someone else. It was just about being able to be me in a different place.
And was it a fashion assistant on a magazine?
No, it was in an agency. A photographic agency, and I was so bad at my job. And I used to come in, they used to have a stereo, it was kind of trendy, and all these photographers there. And I used to come in, put on the Rolling Stones really loudly, and I'd dance around the office. And everyone was like, "You are literally, if we didn't like you and you weren't so insane, we would fire you." but then I'd come in with all my thrift store finds, and I'd come in with like little chubby fur, little rabbit jackets, and people would be like, "Look at you, you're so crazy what you're wearing." Actually, now it's so normal, that kind of clothes. But it was funny, I remember coming and people were like, what have you got now? And it was like, I was a bit like the office jester. And I think that, you know, only because they were so kind of hardcore, it was the only way I knew how to survive myself in that kind of atmosphere, because it was so, you know, American.
But at that point, you know, we didn't use the term vintage. It was secondhand and it was smelly. And, you know, and only certain kind of eccentric people really bothered. I mean, how did you get the bug? And then why did you decide to get behind it in the way that you did?
Well, in my lunch break, there was an amazing Salvation Army on Spring and Lafayette. And I went there every day and it was amazing, the stuff. It was like a little Salvation Army. So it was like a boutique. It wasn't one of those big warehouses. So the scale of it was amazing. And I look back and the things I got, and there was the happiest moments going out on my lunch break. And I made friends with everybody. And I got a gold sequin jacket there that Kate Moss, she's got, but I used in the Vogue shoot with Kate Moss. I got all these amazing things there. And I think that, like, so it was a passion, is what I can say. And it was just something that I was good at it. And I'd never really been good at anything, and I knew that I was good at it because I loved it so much. So, you know, that's really why. So I got behind it because it kind of got behind me, you know?
Yeah. And so how did the cheap date, the editorial side of all this come out?
Well, the cheap date, you know, Kira was doing, we kind of, cheap date was, you know, here. And then I was there and I was like, Kira, like, there's loads of opportunity here to do something really good.
So, and Kira was the founder of Cheap Date.
Yeah, and we co-edited it here. And I was like, yeah, there's loads of opportunities. I didn't talk like that, you know. So there are lots of ways that could be a good issue. And then it just sort of started. And I knew people, I was going out a lot. And then Chloe, and I remember Chloe Sevigny her brother had like a big crush on me. You did, Paul, you did. And, yeah. And he was like, you know, so I was like, hey. He was like, well, sir, hey, like, what do you need? Like, hey. I was like, I really want Chloe to be the centerfold for Cheap Date. And he was like, okay, like that. And so kind of like, I think that Chloe loved Cheap Date as
and
well.
And she was like a big grunge and 90s she was like star.
She was a big grunge 90s star. And she'd done Kids. And she was like, anyway, I went round to the ground. And Paul once said to me, and I did actually end up dating Paul for a long time, but he said to me, if you come on a date with me, I will take you to Chloe's favourite thrift stores in Connecticut. Where they grew up. So it was like...
So date okay. For Cheap Date.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. Which I did a lot of that for Cheap Date. Trust me, there was a lot of... I'm not going to go into it, but, you know, it was fun anyway. But I think that... So, yeah, to cut long story short, I took Chloe 7 years centerfold picture, which was so nice because she did a book with Rizzoli of her favourite pictures. And in the middle of her book is the Cheap Date picture, which was so nice. Yeah, it was a great picture because it was like literally a handheld camera, you know, grainy, and it was, and so a lot of the stuff we would shoot and do in Harmony. So Harmony Korine, I met him at the Gramercy Park Hotel, and I took him like 10 things, and he had to make up stories about them. So he'd be like, this was like horror, you know, like make up stories about the clothes. And so it was all about secondhand clothes and them having stories and celebrating that. And then Anita Pallenberg interviewed Debbie Harry, and we did a cover shoot with Debbie Harry and Mick Rock. So it was like this kind of punk tapping into a kind of a punk rock. And Marlon Richards was the art director. He's a very talented art director. And his dad was Keith Richards, I should say. So it's kind of glamorous. It attracted glamorous people. So I remember we'd have these amazing parties where we never had a guest list on principle. If you knew about the party, you could come. You know, there were like real people who like rock and roll, like old timers. And then Keith Richards was there. Giselle was there. I mean, Kate Moss, Liv Tyler. It was insane. And I remember people were like, how? Because it was then that people want, you know, to get the VIPs and everything. It was because it's fun.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
So was it mostly about having a laugh and doing what you loved?
And it was about that, definitely. But it was also, there was definitely like there was definitely an antidotal element to it, which was a reaction to the mass marketing and the kind of generic pushing stuff on people and the newness. And it was definitely a reaction. It was definitely a reaction to that. And secondhand shopping for me has always had that allure. You know, I love it. To me, it's about going off grid. It's like, no, I'll just do it myself, thanks. And I like giving money to, it's not even, and I love giving it to charity, but I also really like not giving it to people who have so much of it. And that money goes back into charging huge prices to people.
Yeah.
And creating the absolute kind of, it predicated on creating desire.
Yeah, a kind of hunger for things that are new, a must-have situation, which makes people feel terrible about themselves, right? Because they feel like somehow they're lacking because they don't have it. That's not a way to make money, right? That's awful.
And charging so much money as well. Like the kind of the markup is so much, and it's done with very, very clever branding. And listen, to some extent, you know, I know that someone could say to me, well, you know, you're a hypocrite because I've done fashion shoots, and I have, but I have always put secondhand shoot clothes in my shoots, and I've always been who I am within this system. And, you know, so I don't actually, you know what, I don't think people think about me for a second. So, you know, there is that as well.
Is it still possible to find good thrift stuff? Because some of us also feel like we didn't get in early enough, so it's all been bought.
No, it's not. No, that's not the case. I think it's harder, but no. I mean, also, there are different platforms where you find that stuff. So, you know, now it's just more on the surface. So Vestiaire Collective or, you know, Lampoo or like, I mean, I don't have to, you know, eBay. You know, so which is brilliant, you know, so, you know, you can still find things. And, you know, charity shops, you know, yeah, I mean, people say a lot to me, well, the charity shops are now full of, you know, last year's kind of, what's it?
Whistles.
Boohoo, or, you know, yeah, like yes. Kind of like high street kind of, you know, cheap high street clothes. I don't know what to say to that. I don't know what to say. Probably true, but you can still find great stuff. And I do often. And so, you know, no, there's still, it's still there.
And what do you look for? What are kind of, you know, sensible things to look for and to find? I mean, I can say that you found me. I got it at your Oxfam secondhand boutique in Selfridges. But it's the best coat I've ever had. And it's camel coloured 1970 CNA, 70
so
quid.
So good on you.
Yeah, it's great.
It was perfect for you. It looked great.
And I know that will be with me, I hope, unless I lose it.
Yeah, yeah. God, no. Why would you
so
not?
So what sort of things, how do people find their forever pieces in clever ways?
I think that, you know, I think people really, you know, think about what you want. You know, I think it's really good to go with something in mind. So think, well, what do you want? You know, do you want a piece of cashmere? Do you want a great coat? Do you want a camel coat from the 70s? Or do you want a men's military jacket? I think the thing with secondhand, it's really good. You know, it's the same as probably when people go new shopping. It's really good to have something in mind. And then what usually happens, I find, is that, you know, you might have something in mind and you go in and that thing might not appear, but something else will appear. I do believe in a karmic thrifting energy.
I love the idea that it'll find you, the piece will find you.
I do believe that. I think there is like a kind of... I do, because I've had too many good experiences.
A divine thrifting.
Yeah, I remember going to a thrift store and I was like, okay. And I looked, and I was like, oh, hang on a minute. I really want to find something today. I really want to find something. I know I'm not leaving here unless I find something. So show yourself. I went round again and I found something really, really good. And it had been like in the thing. So I was like, thank you.
If you're clear thank about you. Your needs.
I was clear.
The universe.
And I wanted to find something that day, and I did in that shop.
Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, it was a really good like 90s APC denim jacket. Really faded, really, really good. Go with something in mind. Like, for example, I love men's oversized knitwear because that's what I like. So, you know, what do you want? You know, I think it's good to, what do you need? And so I think that's really half the battle is to go in with something that you want or you need. And then you're engaged.
Mm.
Otherwise, it can be quite, it's hard to sort of focus in a charity shop sometimes. It's like, meh, 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 meh. And then if you go, right, I'm going to head to the men's rail. I'm going to look through that knitwear. And then you're kind of, you're switched on. It's like someone's plugged you into the kind of thrifting circuit. The other thing is, I saw the Celine jackets, £3,000. And I thought, God, yeah, they are. I mean, I collect those kind of blazers from Oxfam Online. And I went to Oxfam Online and I got one. Is it the same? No, it's not identical. Is it as good? Probably. You know, I'm just saying. And it's an old St. Michael's. And, you know, I'll just do it that way. Thanks.
I love that.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online.
Okay, serious question. How many times have you been out recently? Actually, you know, scratch that. How many times have you woken up the day you were supposed to go out and felt flooded with dread? How long have you spent praying that the other person will cancel so you don't have to?
And yet, just as we're avoiding people, so many of us feel really lonely and more tired than ever, particularly now the days are getting a bit longer and you think, how am I going to have the energy to go out into the world?
Our social batteries are very flat at the moment, and that can make us feel isolated, which can lead to trouble. And in my experience, therapy has helped me track my best energy sources and helped me better identify what leaves me feeling depleted.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try?
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch anytime for no additional charge.
With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/midult. That's better, HELP.com/midult.
BetterHelp, because sometimes the best thing to do is acknowledge that we are not, in fact, absolutely fine. So Oxfam, how did you form your collaboration with Oxfam?
It was really simple. I had done something with Joanna Lumley. I got asked to do this thing called Swapping, and it was this kind of this initiative. And I spent the day with Joanna Lumley, who was really nice, really nice. I was feeling quite shy, so I don't know, but she was great. And so I met Oxfam, were there because it's an Oxfam initiative. And then I got a call about 3 months later saying, Oh, we talked about it. It was a conversation literally while we were waiting for Joanna to do something, and their head of press, Emma, who I work with now, and she said to me, you know, or one of us said, God, it'd be cool to do a show. Anyway, move on. And then about 6 months later, I got a call, and it was Emma saying, you know, that conversation we had, this is in 2016, maybe 2015, 2016, and she said that conversation we had. And I was like, no. Well, okay, well, let's meet. And then we met, and then it's a funny, and again, it's that mindset shift of like thinking of being really like a bit scared of it, I think.
And when then you say being show, like, this was a fashion show.
This is a big fashion show called Fashion Fighting Poverty. Yeah. And it was all using all second, all Oxfam clothes. And anyway, so to cut long story short, I then, you know, shifted it, and I was like, oh, that's really exciting. Yes, please. And so we did one, and it was good. And then we did another one. And then we were about to do another one. It had to get cancelled 2 days before. And then we were about to do another one, and the Queen died. So that got cancelled too. Mm. So we're doing another one in February. This February, we're doing a big one in London, opening London Fashion Week, actually.
That's amazing.
I think that's so fantastic, isn't it? Because it's so, like, it's so, it elevates it. And also, and when you started doing it, it's quite radical in 2016, because that's sort of quite a big, fast
people
fashion.
I don't think people were that interested. I mean, I had to ask Oxfam, but I, you know, it was... You know, I have to get, and basically, like, my family were all on the front row, like, but like, none of my family, and that's not fair. Like, there were lots of like donors there and lots of people from Oxfam, and there some press were there, but it was a really small venue, and it was just not on the radar, and it was not, I don't think it was very sexy. You know, also it was like people were like into their fashion big time, yeah. New fashion. It wasn't like, it was very something other, and now it's perceived differently.
So you have to go and you have to source effectively the entire collection.
Yeah.
And then style it and then send it out there.
Yeah.
It's funny, I wonder how many of the big designers you're up against, because they all work from vintage, don't they? A lot of the time, from archive.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I know. That's why vintage is another great thing, is that, you know, you're going to the source of ideas, you know, which is interesting too for people to know that actually you're not getting second best. You're actually often getting something in its original form, which can be more kind of lovely or stylish.
How do you think, you know, since we've all, this is not our first rodeo, how do you think that fashion has changed in the last, well, 30 years really, since you, you know, put a toe in the water?
Oh God, is it 30 years? When you say 30 years, I think, God, the 1960s. No, it's not. It's not the 1960s. No. It's very much not. How's it changed? It's changed hugely. I mean, I would say fashion has really changed in the last, since Instagram.
Really?
Because it just took, it demystified what fashion was. Because before you'd have the Vogue issue, you know, you'd have two Vogue issues twice a year and it would show the collections and that's what people would wear. You know, that was what was going to be, what was on the runway was the information. That was the very narrow kind of kernel of information that you would have. You know, to know what, you know, now that's just not the case. And that's why fashion magazines are either not in existence or, you know, very, very small, you know, kind of, you know, it's just changed massively because people, you know, and TikTok, because people saw what Kendall Jenner wearing on their TikTok. People saw pictures of Debbie Harry. I remember doing a story with Sophie Darlett as Debbie Harry, 15 years ago. And, you know, I was looking through reference books and stuff. Now that story, people can look, knowing about Jane Birkin or Catherine Deneuve or Shelley Duvall or movies from the 70s or Sissy Spacek in Badlands and all that kind of source that I was really into, you know. I loved research and I loved movies and I loved drawing from that. And that was really exciting. I still do it, but it's for everybody now.
It's amazing.
Those actually, images are all on the surface. Like they come into people's feed every
fashion
day.
Fashion Freedom of Information Act.
Which is
it's
great.
It's released it into the world, isn't it?
Yeah, people are making lookbooks.
It changes
on,
it.
Exactly, lookbooks on TikTok, scrapbooks, you know, visual, digital scrapbooks that would have taken us, you know, years of experience and whatever to compile, that they just do sort of almost instantly. They draw it from everywhere and boom, there it is. And you can tap into, okay, I feel like that 70s aesthetic, or even I feel like that 1971 aesthetic. It's almost that drilled down so quickly on the social. It's extraordinary.
Exactly. Exactly, and it makes it much more democratic, and it also makes it, you know, less exciting as a fashion editor.
Yeah.
But that's okay, you know, because, you know, that's just the way it is. And I think that, yeah, so it's changed hugely and people aren't governed by that. It just makes the idea of this one particular magazine saying what's in fashion is just kind of just completely defunct. I mean, it just doesn't. I'm not saying that Vogue and those magazines don't have a voice and don't have a place and all of that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that thing of like saying what is going to be in fashion coming from one place is no longer true at all.
Yeah, they can't dictate the trends. And also because they're so, it's so global and it's coming from so many different corners, they can't control it either, can they?
No, because it
can't...
used to be a, you know, trickle down, sorry to use that phrase, but trickle down from Vogue. And now it's more of a like trickle up, isn't it? From the streets and from social media and, you know, you can
exactly.
set your own agenda.
Exactly. And that just opened up everything. The other thing that's really changed is the fact that this secondhand thing, which again, always lent, it, by definition, is a more independent, often a more independent way of doing things, I think, in terms of fashion, you know, finding things. So that's interesting, because that's changed a lot.
It's funny, isn't it? Because there was sort of, you know, there was like, you know, haute couture and high-end ready-to-wear. And the high street was kind of, it wasn't in existence in the way that it is now. And then you didn't, you know, then you had your Topshop getting all pumped up. Then you had Zara. So you had a lot of high street. You had a lot of expensive fashion. And suddenly it was like, well, maybe there's another way. Maybe it doesn't have to be one of those two paths.
Exactly. No, exactly. And I think that, you know, exactly. And what was really amazing was that in the last, I would say, 2 years, is that kids want secondhand. Secondhand is cool. And things only change mainstream when people want to do it out of a choice, out of a style choice. I think, yes. And the environmental crisis definitely helped make it a style choice. But fundamentally, it has to be them. It has to be like a trend, a legitimate trend. And that's happened. That has shifted from ages having not had that, of it being, it wasn't a trend, it was still alternative, and then it just went, and it just flipped, and all my kids, I have two, but all my friends' kids, they shop secondhand.
And also for them, secondhand isn't vintage, is it? It's literally, someone else didn't want it, I'll have it.
Exactly, it's different, exactly. Vintage is much more our generation.
Yeah. Exactly. That's funny, it's gone from secondhand to vintage, which legitimised it, because it gave it a brand.
Yeah.
Back to secondhand again, which is what it actually is.
I was in secondhand, I have to say. That was always, because vintage always seemed always very, I used to be really anti the word vintage, which was silly. But vintage, you know, but now.
It does feel like rarefied, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and it someone felt like, sourced it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I always minded that fact that no, I source it. I go to the source myself. Yeah, which was silly.
Don't go to a vintage dealer and pay £2,000 for a dress that she's found in a market. I mean, there were vintage charlatans as well as vintage heroes, weren't there?
A bit. Yeah, I don't know who those were exactly, but yeah, I mean, yeah, it just became, I just wasn't. Yeah, I loved the secondhand and I liked going to the Salvation Army. My kind of heritage of it was in the market before I went to New York. I'd go to the market and charity shops. We loved it. Me, Kira, Iris Palmer. That's what we did. So it was a tribal thing. We did it. And Iris had a house, a house on the Portobello Road, and we'd all go there. And, you know, we'd been to the charity shop and then New York. And I think that... I didn't go to the... There weren't really vintage shops, actually. There weren't any. There was one brilliant one called Resurrection. It was expensive, so it wasn't my thing. But I went to the Bronx and to the Queens and to Harlem. And I really did go to, like, all the thrift stores. I liked the thrift stores, the Goodwills, the Cancer Research. And what was incredible about New York was that you'd have the Upper East Side ones. And you'd go in and be like old ladies in the Jewish council thrift store, you know. And then you'd go and I've got amazing Calvin Klein coat from, I mean, amazing stuff. And then you'd go to the other Cancer Care on the Upper East Side and you'd find amazing old 80s Ralph Lauren. Because it was the women who lived on the Upper East Side would go to their thrift store. So you'd found amazing, my favourite cushion in there, my needlepoint I have upstairs of a bouquet of flowers and, you know, just like so many good things, really. A lot of things I don't have anymore, but, you know, hey. But and then you'd go to the Bronx, you'd go to Queens, Astoria, Queens, and you'd get, you'd walk in, it'd be Benny King really loudly, and, you know, like not seeing anyone in your kind of world, from a different world. And I just loved that. I loved the kind of human experience. Personally, I loved it. And, you know, then I'd get original Velvet Underground t-shirts. I mean, amazing stuff, which I gave to a really good friend of mine who loved the Velvet Underground. But, you know, yeah, and like amazing punk rock tops. Like, I've got one from an original punk one from New York in the 80s, 70s with zips here and zip, like goth, like amazing stuff. And I think that, you know, so it was very rich pickings, but it was not vintage. It was secondhand.
It sounds like you sprinkle all your things like sort of fertilizer all over, you know, that part. You know, Kate Moss has got the gold jacket. She should definitely give it back. You give the Velvet Underground t-shirt away. And so what do you do with the things that you find? Do you give them to people? Do you give them to Oxfam? Do you sell them? How do you put your stuff back into the sort of fashion, you know, jungle?
Oh, well, what I do is, if I'm going to a friend of mine, I went to stay with in New York, who loves vintage. So if I'm going to go and stay with her, I went to stay with her. I bought her two vintage Saint Laurent. So I love them as presents. So I'll get always vintage presents for people on the whole, if I know the kind of thing they love. And then, yeah, I mean, Oxfam, I bought stuff from Oxfam. And yeah, I mean, the jacket that Kate Moss, I don't even know if she still has that. That was 20 years ago. So I don't know if she has that. I mean, and then other things, you know, Nita Pallenberg gave me a lot of, you know, lovely things, because I would go around and she'd have a belt and I'd give her a bag. And you know, it was good vibes, you know. And I think that has with secondhand, you know, like Nita gave me amazing military coat with big shearling sheepskin, like that fuzzy. And I don't know where some of them are. Some of them fell apart and stuff, but I think that with secondhand, for me, you know, I'm quite old school in that way of, like, you know, I like giving it away as well, and I like receiving it. And so I do less of that stuff now, but I have given away a lot of things.
I love that. I don't mind that. That all these things have their journey, and you're not the owner. You're just, you know, you're just for now.
And actually, that's a nice story, because I did this big fair. I did a fundraising sale with friends in April, and someone gave this beautiful little diamond star necklace, and Charlotte won it. George Ward, Charlotte Tilbury won it. And then I loved it. And someone said to George and Charlotte, you know, Babe really loves that. And then George, Charlotte, oh, I love it, you know, whatever. And then Charlotte, George actually was like, you know what, Babe, about 6 months later, he's like, Babe, you know, here it is. I'm going to give it back to you. And my sister recently said, God, do you remember that necklace at the sale that Charlotte won? And I'm going to give it to her. And I love this thing of, and in a way, that's like a thing of clothes and everything. I think it's just really good vibes of, like, things going to different people at different points. And, you know, it's not about buying a new thing. And that necklace, my sister will really, really love, because it's kind of, she's seen the journey that it's had. And I really wanted it. And then I'm like, really like it, actually got enough necklaces. And she, you know, I'm getting, my point being that in a way, that's a kind of, that's just an example of, like, you know, it's nice things being passed on. And it's the way that it should be. And it's the way that it always was in the olden days, hand-me-downs, you know.
It's nice, the idea that we're not owners, that we're custodians, you know, that we're like guard, we guard them for the time that we're supposed to have them, because otherwise, there's such a kind of possess, like, I possess this, I own this, it's mine, it's mine. And actually, instead, it's like, I'm going to hold on to this for a bit, and then actually you're going to look wonderful in it or whatever.
But it also recognises that these are precious things.
Yes.
And they shouldn't be, you know, made for and then chucked straight into a landfill.
Exactly. Exactly. And also, exactly. And, you know, I mean, trust me, I've got things that I love that I would find hard to lend out.
Yes, from my cold, dead hands.
Yeah, exactly. Like, try to get, you know, trust.
My I'm precious,
not,
yes.
Yeah, it's not all nice, you know. You know, I pick my things that I'm willing to have it, you know. But I think that, and also that's why the rental company, and there's a really good rental company called Circler, C-E-R-C-L-E, which is, she's got amazing, Coco's the founder, she's got amazing vintage, amazing, like, rare stuff, because she has a lot of vintage, like, beautiful secondhand pieces. And I think people are doing, rather than just, like, getting the dresses from last year, and I think that's a really interesting way of doing it as well. And I think also, like, now, and there's also friends of mine have started up a thing called the charity shop gift card, which is so nice. And so, like, I'll be giving that to my sister for Christmas, which is, like, you know, you get a charity shop gift card, and they can spend it anywhere in charity shops. And I just think that's a really, that's things so like cool. that, you know, I know.
I mean, that's godchildren sorted, isn't it?
No, but it's great. And it yeah. comes, it says a charity shop gift card.
Where do you get that?
You can actually get it from Tesco's and Sainsbury's. What's really great is, and if you go to online charity shop gift card and they're on Instagram, you can get it. But my point being that, like, yeah, for someone who loves secondhand, or even people who don't love secondhand, you know, it's a really nice present because yeah. it's an antidote again. And it's good to get people out into the charity shops as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. this is what I'm choosing to give you.
Yeah, particularly now, weird year, weird time. Let's try and do things a bit better.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
no
exactly.
less fun.
A little
but
bit better.
No less fun and no less beautiful.
And it's really nice way to, you know, it's a nice way to shop. You know, and that's why I love the work I do with Oxfam, because, you know, it's secondhand clothes. It's legitimately as fashion as anything else out there. As I said, fashion and style and clothes, it's all the same. Okay, so one might be new and, you know, and produced and being sold. So what makes that different from Oxfam being as credible in fashion terms? It doesn't. But the big thing is that you're giving the money to help the poorest people in the world. You're yeah. helping, you're literally giving money to fight inequality in the world. That's what Oxfam's chief. And also you're helping to fight climate change, because for Oxfam, their project work is basically now, has to be, around climate change. And in East Africa, you know, someone's dying every minute of starvation, and that's to do with climate change. So it's really like a very, very, very active thing you're doing to try and help people who are absolutely in a terrible, terrible situation. And so it's very powerful, because it's easy to go, yeah, Oxfam. If you actually read anything about Oxfam, and you read about the work that they're actually doing on the ground, it's really like, oh yeah, that's a really good thing. Because it's easy to forget, because it's like you're so used to just seeing it. But actually, you know, if you read, yeah, as I say, it's very, you know, their project work is really amazing.
Yes, and just to cheapen that for a second, it means you get to be an activist by shopping.
Exactly. But you're right. But Annabelle, that is true. And actually, that's really interesting, because I had a drink with someone from Oxfam and editor of a magazine, because we're trying to do something for February Fashion Week to tie in with the show. And that's exactly what someone from Oxfam would say, that it is a form of activism. So it's not just like a nice like word spin. It's true.
Well, it's shopping that allows you to feel good about yourself, not incredibly empty at the end of it. As you were saying, Emily, earlier, that you have this unslakable thirst and hunger for new, more, because think it's going to fix you. Shopping's never going to fix you, but if you shop this way, you can fix some other shit.
Exactly. It's also a little bit of personal activism as well, because you're no longer defining yourself by rules that have been made by other people telling you how you should look and what you should wear. It's about finding your individual, I don't want to say style, but you know what I mean? And
fashion
saying, actually,
style.
This is what I want to wear. And it doesn't matter that it isn't, you know, as
every time you wear it, you feel a little bit proud because you've slightly written your own story.
I think
you?
That's true. Yeah.
And you've gone against capitalism.
I'm like, actually.
Right, there we go, revolution. There
yes,
we are.
Exactly. Genuinely feel inspired. I feel like I'm going to go online, Oxfam online. Off we go.
Really, yeah. Good.
Beg on it. You are a sensation.
Yeah,
you
really
thank
are.
You so much for coming and inspiring us and being so sort of fascinating and brilliant about everything. And we're
lovely.
Incredibly grateful and happy to have you.
Yeah, thank you so
such
much.
Such a lovely, I mean,
thank you very much for having me.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Annabelle Rifkin and Emily McMeekin of The Midult. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review and subscribe.